Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Plus, a lot of people are very upset about last night's All-Star game. But I think we're all missing something that was taught to us by Hollywood 30 years ago. We'll get to that a little bit later on as well. And next Friday is the 5th annual Legends in the South softball game at Joe Riley Park. And it'll include former players from the Tampa Bay Rays, the Atlanta Braves, and the New York Yankees all battling next Friday, with gates opening at 5 o'clock for FanFest, first pitch at 7:30, fireworks after the game. And all tickets are only $10. You can't beat it. To go meet all these former big leaguers, watch them play, and a portion of the proceeds that night will go to MUSC's Children's Hospital. So, I mean, what excuse could you have to not be there? Next Friday at Joe Riley Park, head on over to riverdogs.com to get your tickets. And playing in that softball game next week and joining us now is Greg McMichael, who pitched in the big leagues for a number of years, won a World Series with the Atlanta Braves, and now is part of the Atlanta Braves organization still. Greg's with us now. Greg, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Luke?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. I want to get to all sorts of different topics with you, but first, let me start with last night's All-Star game. You know, the American League has beaten the National League 8 straight years. I know you still follow the game very closely. You have a podcast. You work with the Atlanta Braves. Do you take anything away from the AL's dominance in the All-Star games over the NL in the past decade?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. To be honest, I didn't even watch it. I'm still kind of disgusted that we lost the All-Star game and it went to Denver, being part of the Braves organization. So That was my little boycott. I didn't watch the game, but you know, you look back and you see that's happened. I don't know if the dominance translates to, you know, world champions, but they certainly played a lot better in the American League than we have in the National League.
Yeah, look, it didn't look right. It was a nice thing, but it didn't look right honoring Hank Aaron in Colorado. So since you mentioned that, and you're part of the Braves organization, I can only imagine what the reaction was like in the organization when news came down that the All-Star game was not going to be played at Truist Park anymore.
Yeah, you know, we were pretty upset. We put a lot of time and energy in getting ready for it, and of course our fans, and then just the community at large. And so it was very unfortunate that it got political and unnecessarily, and you know, the fans and the people of Atlanta missed out.
Yeah, no, and I certainly agree with you. Talking with Greg McMichael, who'll be part of the softball game at Joe Riley Park next week. Now, a lot of the guys we've talked to for this game played their minor league ball in Charleston. You did not, and I don't think you ever even played in Charleston because you never pitched in the Sally League, the South Atlantic League. Do you have experiences over the years? Have you spent any time here in Charleston?
I love Charleston. I love going and playing golf in Kiowa, and we vacationed over there a little bit over the years, but I've just come to love Charleston. Being a part of of this event over the last few years has been very, very special. I'm actually bringing my family this year, so we're looking forward to it, and the town is unbelievable, and it just seems to be something we look forward to every year.
Now, when it comes to softball, you were a big league pitcher for softball. Do you want to play a position somewhere else? How do you swing the bat? What's the scouting report for Greg McMichael as the softball player?
Well, I'm not our key player, so I'll be pitching, and then I'll try to I don't move real well. I've had like 9 surgeries over the years, most of them on my knees. So I brought in the right guy. So I got Klusko playing, and Mark Wohlers, believe it or not, was a great pitcher, but he's a tremendous softball player, can hit and moves really well. Chris Hammond, Brian Jordan's one of my aces I'm bringing in. Of course, Brian's still in great shape and was a great hitter. And so we'll have a good time. We'll have a very good team. I always make it a point to construct my team accordingly. So we're there to win. But most importantly, we want to have a great time and for the fans, and we want to raise a lot of money for the Children's Hospital.
Yeah, of course. You mentioned those injury or those surgeries. I want to ask you about that because, as I understand it, way back at age 13, you know, you're a great story because age 13, didn't the doctors tell you you'll never play sports again, and yet you had a long big league career on the mound.
That is correct. I had developed a rare cartilage disease at the time. It was rare. It's not so rare anymore. It's called osteochondritis dissecans. And the cartilage died in both knees, and they started trying. They did some microfracture surgery and took a lot of it out. And it was just kind of, I think it just kept me grounded over the years. You know, I always love people tell you can't do things. I love people who really take that and use it as fuel. And for me, I knew I needed to do something. And I figured the path of least resistance was pitching. So I put all my heart and soul into pitching and really developed that. And I think when you're left to do one thing, then you can get pretty good at it. And fortunately, I'd always been a pitcher, but then when all the other sports were taken away and I was able just to focus on pitching, it served me well. And the path wasn't simple. There were plenty of times where I had surgeries again and didn't do well, wanted to quit. And fortunately, I had people in my life who really encouraged me. And I was telling the story the other day, one of our scouts who became legendary for the Braves, named Roy Clark. He came to visit me one time when I was feeling pretty down. I was ready to quit, and he encouraged me to stick it out. And literally 2 years from the day, I was a closer for the Atlanta Braves in 1993. So you need people like that to come alongside you and encourage you and love on you when things get tough. And I'm so thankful for people like that that did that for me in my life.
Yeah, because what led you to the Braves in 1991 there, I know the Indians let you go, and again, I've read the story that they told you, like, you should probably try something else. This pitching thing's not going to work out for you. And then, as you said, 2 years later, you're in the big leagues, and you had an eight-year big league career, so a lot of perseverance for you.
Yeah, one of the most amazing things is the guy who actually told me to retire from the Indians. When we won the World Series in 1995, I was in the clubhouse celebrating. And somehow I ended up right inside the doors that led to the field. And as I've got a bottle of champagne in my hands, opens up the door, there's the guy who had now become the assistant general manager for the Cleveland Indians. And he walked up and shook my hand and said, congratulations. And that was pretty amazing. That moment, it's like time stood still. And I'm looking at him, he's looking at me. And he walked in and we kind of talked for a minute. And then I went on celebrating. So it was a pretty special time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because you win a World Series. I mean, that's enough, I imagine. That's just a thrill. But did it mean even more for you to be part of a Braves team that beat Cleveland to win that World Series after, your story?
Yeah, I never had any bitterness about the Indians. I knew that was God's plan for me and that my path was something other than being a Cleveland Indian. You know, a lot of those guys I played with in minor league. So I knew Albert Bell and Chuck Niggy, and those guys were great, and they were unbelievable, talent. So being able to play against my buddies in the World Series and have a little bit of bragging rights was a lot of fun. But at that point, I just was in such a great place. I mean, my gosh, we ended up with 14 straight championships with the Atlanta Braves, which is a record to this day. And to be a part of that organization, it was just it was a phenomenal experience and something that I look back. I didn't think about where I'd been necessarily and who let me go. I don't know if that really fueled me, but being able to be a part of what John Schuerholz and Bobby Cox put together and getting to play with unbelievable Hall of Famers like Smoltz and Glavin and Chipper and it was just a great experience. And I look back on that with unbelievable memories. But then to this day, being able to work in the organization as the director of alumni relations and be able to do special events like this and be able to bring guys to Charleston and then do a lot of things in Atlanta for our fans and throughout our fan base in the Southeast is a great privilege for me. And I know it all started back with, Roy Clark drafted me with the Cleveland Indians and then signed me with the Atlanta Braves. And, it was just my path. And so I'm thankful for all of it, and I don't look back at anything that was negative about that. I just knew that was right for me.
Talking about Greg McMichael, who pitched for the Atlanta Braves, spent 8 years in the big, still is part of the Braves organization. Take us onto the field that night because, you know, as sports fans, that's what we dream of in our bedrooms, being part of a World Series winning team. You guys beat the Indians 1-0. Glavine pitches that gem in Game 6. What was the feeling like when you ran out into that field knowing, hey, we're world champions?
I think at that point you're pretty exhausted. I mean, you're living off of – you just completed spring training, 162-game season, and then, you know, we were coming off the strike and just a lot of different circumstances that were going on. And then you start this new season called the playoffs, and every pitch means something. And, of course, you're tired. You're not 100% because you've just played such a long season. And so you're living off of adrenaline. And I think it all kind of culminates in that last pitch. And you see Marquise Grissom catch the ball. And then all of a sudden, we just start sprinting out to the mound, and we're all excited. We're jumping on. And I think it's just this release of tension, stress, emotion, excitement, something you've dreamed about, worked for. And then, of course, you've got your family there and friends that are watching. And I think it's hard to put into words, but over the weeks following, I think you just your body just kind of collapses and It's a special time. So I think I've probably been able to express and appreciate things more years later than I was really that night. And I just know that we were all super excited. And of course, we got to have the parade down Peachtree Street, and you know, you've got a shared memory with guys that you've been in battle with for months, and you've gone through the thick and the thin, and then some of these guys, remember, I mean, 91 heartbreak in the World Series against the Twins, and then 92, is against the Blue Jays, and so we had a lot of built up, stress and energy and failed expectations over the years, and all of a sudden, for a lot of us, there was probably more emotion than some. You know, that was. I didn't experience 91 and 92, but I experienced 93, and then for a lot of guys, there was a lot more pent up emotion than maybe I experienced, but it was still pretty special.
Yeah, I could imagine. Talking with Greg McMichael, longtime pitcher in the big leagues and with the Atlanta Braves, still is part of the Braves organization. So let me ask you about this year's Atlanta Braves team, because it sounds like a cop out, but you watch this team this year, it's almost been just like a string of bad luck for them. But you played in the league. Tell me, why is this Braves team here at the midway point still under 500? What has gone wrong for them this year?
Yeah, well, you look at some key positions. So our number one pitcher, Mike Soroka, you know, he blows out his Achilles, and then he does it again walking in the clubhouse. And then you lose Darnold with a ligament, and then, you know, we got Ozuna with off-the-field troubles, and now you got Acuna out with a UCL, and I mean, it's just been you lose a couple guys from the bullpen, and so sometimes it's hard to come back just for one or two players. But when you're number one, you're number three, you're number four hitters, and then you lose your closer from the bullpen last year, which was one of the best in baseball, goes to a different team as a free agent. It's just like it's too many hits to come back from, and I don't think our team has always been out of the gate really fast. Even when I played, we were always kind of slow but steady. And so now you start out a little slow, and then you start losing players. And you not only just lose bench players, but you lose key pitchers and key position players. And at some point, it just becomes too much to come back from. You know, unfortunately, we're in a division that is not the West, where those guys are already won 50 to 55 games. Been a little bit slower in the National League East, so we've kind of stayed in it. I don't really know what's going to happen at this point, but I guarantee you over the next 2 weeks when we come out, we've got to play Tampa Bay, and we've got to play the Mets, and we've got to play the Padres. It's going to really tell the tale whether we become buyers or sellers at the trade deadline. And it's just tough. I mean, it's just been one of those years you just had to battle through, and you know, it's no different. I mean, sometimes organizations go through that. I mean, the Mets—they had 20 guys on the IL at one point this year. So we're not alone in that. But it just seems like our key players that we depend upon—they got us almost, you know, within a game of the World Series last year. They've been out, and it's been and then, you know, even Freddie struggled for the first part of the season. Now he's turned it on, and he's been pretty incredible over the last few weeks. But you look at all of those different things, it's no wonder we are where we are.
In your playing days, were you ever part of a team like that where it just felt like, you know, everything was going against you through over the course of a long season?
Yes, 94 was like that. We could not gain any ground. You know, we talk about the 14 straight years of division titles, but that would have never happened if it hadn't been for the strike in 1994, because the Expos were just kicking our butt at every turn. We were 10 games down in September. And then when the strike happened, it just kind of wiped out the season. So it never happened. But that was a year where we came back. I mean, 93, we came back 10 games on the Giants and were close to going back to another World Series. Had a tremendous team. Fred McGriff came over. John Sherrill pulled some incredible strings. And then 94, we had the same team. And it just, nothing worked out. Nobody was pitching well. We weren't hitting well. And then every time we had to play the Expos, they just stuck it to us. So that was one of the years that I remember. Other than that, 95 was incredible. 96 was even more incredible. We just, you know, had some bad breaks there during the World Series. But there wasn't many of those years. I mean, to have a 14-year run at you know, division titles, you can't have too many of those. But 94 definitely sticks out as a year like this year.
Before we let you go, talking with Greg McMichael, who pitched in the bigs for the Braves as part of the organization. He'll be here next Friday for the 5th annual Legends in the South. Let's go full circle back to where we started. You're still part of the Braves organization, and we know how disappointing it was that the All-Star game was moved out of Atlanta. Have you heard anything about future plans, any sort of All-Star game in the future, near future, to come back to Atlanta to try to make up for this year?
No, I have not. I'm sure the organization has been talking to Major League Baseball about that. I know that would be our desire. We definitely want to showcase what we're doing in Atlanta. We have an incredible facility with the Battery and with the new stadium. We've got a top-rated organization, and you know, we just have a lot to offer. We'd love to showcase the city, what we're doing in Atlanta. I think we've got the best city in Major League Baseball. So hopefully it won't be too much longer, but I've not heard exact plans. But we got a lot of stuff going on with the organization. Fans have a tremendous experience when they come to our stadium with all that we have going on. And it's just, if you haven't been there, we'd love to have you out. It's just a great place to watch a ball game.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been meaning to get there. We were just talking yesterday about best stadiums in Major League Baseball, and that's certainly one that I have to get over and check out. He's Greg McMichael, sure, pitched with the Atlanta Braves as part of the organization, and will be here next Friday for the 5th annual Legends in the South softball game at Joe Riley Park. You can get tickets online at riverdogs.com. Greg, appreciate all the time. Best of luck the rest of the season here at the Braves, and have some fun next Friday here in Charleston.
Will do. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Greg McMichael, who spent 8 years in the bigs, including 5 at the Braves, as a very important relief pitcher, back, especially when they won that World Series in 95. And he's not alone. I saw a lot of people say, not watching it last night. I get that. A lot of people in this area, I'm sure, didn't tune into the All-Star game last night because they moved it out of Atlanta. I could understand. I made my feelings known at the time. No, I didn't agree with it. I did not think it was the right move. And it fell off honoring Hank Aaron last night in Colorado. I mean, it was great to honor him, but, I mean, Colorado? Think about what that could have been in Atlanta. And also, not that it really means much, but to also have the players out there in those ridiculous uniforms, too. It would have looked so much better if Aaron Judge was actually in the Yankee pinstripes while he's standing out there. You know, if Freddie Freeman is actually in the Braves uniform honoring Hank Aaron, you know, instead of these ridiculous jerseys they had last night. And I don't want to be an old guy yelling at the crowd, yelling at the clouds, freaking out about the jerseys, which were very unpopular. I get why they do it. They want to try to sell them. But, man, those things were hideous last night. The All-Star game, you want guys in their jerseys. Baseball's all about the history, right? The Yankee pinstripes. All the different jerseys that you have, put them in those. Not these ridiculous, you know, pajama suit last night that they were all wearing. Ridiculous. We'll see if an All-Star game, if and when, it comes back to Atlanta anytime soon. But appreciate the time from Greg McMichael. Hey, I've always said, you could go and steal this idea. Just give me some of the royalties. I'm waiting for the 30 for 30. I got to pitch this to the head honchos in Bristol. I'm waiting for the 30-on-30 on the 1994 Montreal Expos. And I've said this for years, ever since they started the 30 for 30 series about over a decade ago. Because that team is so interesting. As Greg said, the Braves were 10 games back from the Expos in September when the season ended. That Expos team was so good. They had the best record in baseball. They won two-thirds of their games that year. And Montreal obviously lost their team, never played in a World Series. Right? They weren't very good. That was their one chance. And then a strike came, and they couldn't play the postseason. And then because the money they lost, and it's, you know, it was a small market, they didn't spend a lot of money anyways. Come back in 1995, they sold off all those pieces, had a losing record. They just lost a bunch of money on the strike. Right? And they thought, let's get rid of it. They sold off Larry Walker. Marquise Grissom went to the Braves. They had a young Cliff Floyd at the time. You had Pedro on the pitching staff, who he eventually left. John Wetland went to the Yankees. They had such a great team and a great year. Didn't have a chance to play in the postseason that year. And then that offseason, we're like, all right, well, we gave it a shot. And they just sold off a bunch of pieces to save money. And the Expos were terrible after that and lost the team about a decade later. I think it would make for a really interesting documentary, and I always had the perfect name. Right? People will come up with songs, and before they actually write the lyrics, they come up with a great song title, and they think, all right, I got to write lyrics for this. That's how it started. I had the name. Strike while the iron is hot, because of the double meaning. Because there was a strike, and for the Expos, that was their chance to strike while that was their one chance to go and win. A 30 for 30. Strike while the iron is hot. About the 1994 Montreal Expos. Go and steal my idea. Just give me the credit. I think it'd make for a great documentary. Appreciate the time from Greg McMichael, former Atlanta Brave, who will be here next Friday. Get your tickets online. FanFest starts at 5. The game starts at 7:30. Fireworks after. Tickets are only $10. Proceeds benefit the MUSC Children's Hospital. And it's a bunch of former big leaguers from the Braves, the Rays, the Yankees playing a softball game at Joe Riley Park next Friday. Get your tickets online. It'll be a lot of fun. Appreciate it from Greg. Coming up, let's circle back to that All-Star game. Because many were upset not only that the game was moved out of Atlanta, but that a lot of players opted out of the All-Star game last night. And I just ask, did we not learn anything from A Bronx Tale? We'll get to that next. It's the Mora Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Mauro Midday Show.
Coming up, many were upset that players opted out of last night's All-Star game. But did we not learn anything from A Bronx Tale many years ago? It's the Mora Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Oh, this is another great song. Jamming on a Wednesday, getting over the hump and towards the weekend. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Greg McMichael, former Atlanta Brave. He's still part of the organization. And if you miss anything from the conversation, you can always find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Or find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. You can listen to the show live or on demand there. Now, Greg shared that he boycotted last night's game, being a part of the Braves system or the organization. The Braves very unhappy, obviously, like many Braves fans, that they moved the All-Star game out of Atlanta. But that's not what I want to focus on here, because the All-Star game was last night, and a lot of people were upset for a different reason. You know, about 6 to 8 players, I don't know what the final number ended up being, a handful of players opted out of last night's All-Star game. You had Jacob DeGrom, you had all of the Astro players. I get it for pitchers. I've defended Jacob DeGrom in this decision. Pitchers are on a schedule. You don't want to throw them off of that routine. Also, for DeGrom, he's had issues this year. He's had 4 separate health issues where he's had to either go on the IL or leave the game. So I get it. It's an exhibition game. Why tax your arm even more for a game that doesn't matter? But hitters don't really have an excuse, because hitters, their schedule is to play every day. For pitchers, you would be throwing them off of their schedule with this All-Star game. For hitters, you would be keeping them on schedule. Hitters are used to hitting every day. And if they take 4 days off, that could be enough to throw them out of whack. They're used to seeing live pitching every day. So this gives you a chance, even if it's only 1 or 2 at-bats, right? You take batting practice, then you play in the game, and even if you only get 1 or 2 at-bats, still, it can be enough to break up this 4-day stretch. You didn't do anything Monday, get a few at-bats in Tuesday, didn't do anything Wednesday, Thursday, you come back Friday, you're still, you know, kind of normal, kind of in a routine, instead of having to get back into things to start the second half of the year. Where hitters can opt out is the home run derby, because that throws your swing off. So hitters, I understand if you miss the home run derby. Pitchers, I understand if you miss the All-Star game. But overall, it really didn't bother me much. We see it with the Pro Bowl as well. End of the season, long year. Guys don't want to be bothered. And I don't care. Right? Many do. I don't care. You don't want to go to the Pro Bowl? No problem. You don't want to play in the All-Star game last night? I don't care. But a lot of people are bothered by this, including Hembo, who is Mike Greenberg's sidekick on Greeny, which you can hear before this show right here on ESPN Radio. His real name is Paul Hembidikas, I think it is. It's a Greek name. It's hard to pronounce. That's why they call him Hembo. And he just goes by Hembo. This was Hembo. This came from Greeny yesterday here, which you could hear on this same station before we come on the air. And this was Hembo yesterday, very upset about last night's All-Star game not featuring all of the players that were selected.
Well, today, the All-Star game is going to be played in Denver, Colorado, and it's going to be played without something like 6 or 8 of the players that were elected to play the game, of which Jacob DeGrom is one, and I think probably the most prominent one amongst them. There are 4 members of the Houston Astros that are opting not to go to the All-Star game, and frankly, I hate that, because it's very soft, it's very weak, because baseball fans have now been wanting for 2 years to have the opportunity to boo Astros at the All-Star game, and every single one of them is passing. So the point that I think is most worth making today, Greeny, is when did players decide to stop caring about the fans as much as the fans care about them? The All-Star game is merely a celebration. It's not a game that matters, but it is an opportunity for us to celebrate the best and greatest among us. And it's an opportunity for us as fans to cheer those players on. And it is a responsibility of the players to show up, pay their respects, and show their appreciation to pay the game forward, because this game, this beautiful game, as it was perfectly conceived, is fragile. And it is vital that we not take that for granted.
That was Hembo yesterday on Greeny, right? Real cute. Still has his innocence as a sports fan. Isn't that nice? Now, I know, I actually know Hembo's wife. Let me name drop again, as I often do. We went to school together. I actually first met her when I was 16. But anyways, as a sports fan, we can be very innocent. We have that childlike innocence. You know, Don Henley once wrote a great song called The End of the Innocence back in the 80s. And it's about a kid coming of age, and the kid's parents get a divorce, and his father did some bad things, and, you know, it doesn't go into great detail, but there are lawyers involved, and he then goes, like, on the run and everything. And it's about this kid growing up to realize, like, there's bad in the world, right? Not everything is perfect, even in your own family. Your parents, they got issues. Your father did something bad, right? Not everything is rainbows and ice cream and butterflies. There's going to be bad in your life in the world. That's not going to say that you're going to have a terrible life, but there's going to be things in life. Not everything's perfect. Not everything may even appear as it seems. Not everybody is great. There's going to be some bad things that happen in the world. You're going to have to get used to it. And for me, that moment in sports came when I started working in sports. I've told this story before, but when I was in minor league baseball, the first year I was in minor league baseball, the team didn't want to make the playoffs. They wanted to go home. They were upset when we made the playoffs. And I thought, what is this? Because you grow up as a fan, you care so much about that team. And you think everybody out there cares as much as you. And they want to give it their all. And they want to go out there and they want to go win the World Series. Most guys do feel that way. You need that competitive spirit to get there. Some guys don't feel that way. And I understand in minor league baseball, look, they're not getting paid much, long bus rides. It's not like they're playing for a World Series, but it's still a championship. And as an athlete, when I played growing up, I didn't play any professional sports, but just playing growing up, I always wanted to win. I didn't care if it was a CYO basketball game. I wanted to win, and when we didn't, I was disappointed. In fact, my mother said to me within the past year, we were playing pickleball while I was visiting. And she said, you're really competitive. Well, you want to win. I said, yeah, damn right, Mom. And my mom's the sweetest lady. I love her to death. But when we're out there on that pickleball court, I expect to beat her every time. Sorry, Mom. I want to blow you out in pickleball. I want to whoop you out in that court. I want to win every time I go out there. My sweet grandmother, she's in her 90s, best card player in the family. But when we sit down to play sequence or phase 10, sorry, Grams, I came to win. I'm going to try to beat you every time we play cards. I don't want to lose. I try to win in everything I do. But not everybody may be like that. And not every athlete is like that. Do you really think these athletes care about you? Right, we can talk a lot about athletes being entitled. That clip there from Hembo sounds a little entitled. That he said this is their responsibility to go there and tip their cap and thank the fans? In a perfect world, sure. They should. The athletes should care about the fans. But do we really think they do? Because without the fans, these athletes, of course, have no job. Or they certainly don't have the fortune and fame. If no one's there to watch, if nobody cares, these athletes don't have the lifestyles they love. But with that said, do they really care about the fans? Did we not learn anything from A Bronx Tale when this film came out about 30 years ago? I already referenced Scarface this week. Now we're getting Bronx Tale in. We'll have to go for the trifecta with a Goodfellas reference later this week. But as I heard this from Hembo, I immediately thought of this classic scene from A Bronx Tale 30 years ago.
What are you, a Yankee fan?
Yeah.
Sit down. No, come over here. Sit over here next to me. Come here. So you must be pretty upset after the Yankees lost.
Bill Mazeroski. I hate him. He made Mickey Mantle cry. The paper said that the Mick was crying.
Mickey Mantle, is that what you're upset? Mickey Mantle makes $100,000 a year. How much does your father make?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, see if your father can't pay the rent. Go ask Mickey Mantle, see what he tells you. Mickey Mantle don't care about you, so why should you care about him? Nobody cares.
From A Bronx Tale. Mickey Mantle don't care about you. Why do you care about him? Now, the irony is Chaz Palminteri, he's the one that says that line, he's a huge Yankees fan. And now the kids see in that movie is based on him, so he's being given that advice, even though he's playing the character of the grown man. But Chaz remained a diehard Yankee fan still to this day. In fact, he'll call sports radio up in New York and call himself Chaz from the Bronx, but you know who it is. But he's right, and I'm guilty too, right? I'm still a diehard. I worked in sports. I could see the ugly side of some of the things from both the athletes and the organizations. Doesn't matter. I still bleed my team's colors. But the players don't care. Do they owe us? Yeah, you can make that argument. They owe it to the fans to show up there and tip their cap and say, hey, thank you for supporting our sport and our team and supporting me all year. I get that. Whenever I meet people that say, hey, I love the show. I listen every day. I appreciate you. You're supporting the show. Without you, this show is impossible. I'm always very thankful and grateful for everyone who listens. And there's a lot of you. And I appreciate you. But the athletes, do they really care? You think Aaron Rodgers is caring right now about the Packers fans? Like, oh boy, there's a lot of upset Packer fans. I better show up to training camp. You think he really cares? You think Tom Brady thought about the Patriots when he went to go sign with Tampa Bay? Did he think about the Patriots fans? Like, oh, this is going to disappoint a lot of people in New England. The fans booed Xander Bogaerts last night for some reason in Colorado. He plays for the Red Sox. I don't know why he was booed. But you think he walked back to the dugout afterwards? Thankful that he showed, like, oh, I'm glad I came here and tipped my cap to everybody. These guys don't care and don't think otherwise. Right? They don't care about you. Maybe you shouldn't care about them so much. So I heard Hembo ranting, and he wasn't the only one. A lot of people are very upset. How could these players not go to the All-Star game? If you think it's because they should go there and thank the fans, yeah, in theory, that's a nice idea. But are we that naive to think that that's how sports work, that these fans want to be there just so they can have their moment in front of that sold-out stadium? They don't care. And by the way, so many great lines and lessons from Bronx Tale. Now, Chaz wrote that movie, and his father was a very wise, apparently very wise person. He was played by Robert De Niro in the film. But a lot of great lines, or ideas, or thoughts, or, you know, philosophies. De Niro, with the great speech, it takes no strength to pull the trigger, but try getting up every morning and work for a living. And the working man, that's the tough guy, because his son always tells him, the working man's a sucker. Of course, the famous line, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. The question, is it better to be feared than loved? The line they say, it's great to be Catholic. Get to go to confession every week and start over. I was getting two educations, one from school, one from the streets. Then you get the old Eddie Mush story. Oh, fantastic. Eddie Mush, always mushing everything. Bad luck. He's a jinx. They have to put him in the bathroom while they're throwing dice just to get him away so Sonny can make some money. And the old car door trick, which doesn't work anymore. When you used to go on a date with a woman, right, back in the day, you keep the door locked. You would unlock the passenger door to let her in, close it. And as you walk around the back of the car to go to the driver's side door where you're going to have to unlock it, you have to look inside and see if she leans across and unlocks it for you. And if she does, she's a keeper. And if not, she's selfish. She doesn't care about you. She's going to make you unlock the door yourself. Classic old car door trick that you can't really do anymore. But a great movie, The Bronx Tale. And they taught us something 30 years ago that many seem to forget. Mickey Mantle doesn't care about you, so don't care about him so much. Now, I'm guilty. I still love my teams. I still get hurt when they lose. But I'm not naive enough to sit here and think, hey, they should show up at the All-Star game just to thank us for rooting them on. Athletes don't think that way. We shouldn't think that way either. Coming up, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFL? We got the list from players, coaches, and executives currently in the league. And we'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Executives, coaches, and players have let us know. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up a little bit later on this afternoon, we'll take a look at the recruiting efforts of South Carolina and Clemson. And can Clemson continue this run moving forward? Or how long can they continue this? Get to that coming up a little bit later on. You know, but the Athletic, Mike Sando at the Athletic, does a great job every summer. He puts together a list where he does a survey with the different people in the league and ranks the quarterbacks in tiers. And we have him on the show whenever he comes out with this article and break it down. I find it interesting. Well, ESPN has done the same thing. You can find this on ESPN Plus. But Jeremy Fowler polled 50 executives, coaches, and players in the NFL, and they're releasing these a day at a time. Top running backs, top quarterbacks, top defensive linemen, so on and so forth. So they put out the list yesterday of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league, and this, again, is based off of executives, coaches, and players currently involved in the league. Right? People's peers and colleagues, bosses, that's who's making these decisions. And you really can learn a lot from what they think, because they theoretically should know best about these quarterbacks. They're going up against them. They're coaching against them. They're coaching them. They scouted them, whatever it may be. So their top 10 list. Not a ton of surprises at the top of the list. Patrick Mahomes is number one. Aaron Rodgers, two. Tom Brady, three. Russell Wilson's four. Josh Allen is number five. Then the back half of the top ten, Matt Stafford is six. Dak Prescott is seventh. Lamar Jackson, eighth. Justin Herbert, ninth. Kyler Murray, tenth. I don't think there's a ton of surprises towards the top half. The back half could be a little more controversial. You know, like Matt Stafford, if he was still in the Detroit Lions, would he be number six? If we did this top 10 ranking a year ago, is Matt Stafford clocking in at number six? I think in large part that's because we're predicting Stafford to have a huge year now that he's with the Rams. And if he does, well, then maybe that does show us his true potential, and maybe he really is a top six quarterback in the league. But it seems like it could be a little premature that the main reason why Stafford's ranked that high is because of what we expect to happen this year. But we haven't seen it yet. I don't think he's played like the sixth best quarterback in the league. He has ability, he has talent, but he's also only won, what, one playoff game his entire career? Terrible record against teams with winning records? All right, Stafford, I think he's set for a big year with the Rams. But today, if you ask me to rank the top 10 quarterbacks, I don't think I'm putting him sixth. I also think the back end, you know, like Justin Herbert, number nine, off of just 1 year, maybe a little too early. Let's see how he follows it up this year. Kyler Murray at number 10. Instead of, I don't know, Ryan Tannehill or a Matt Ryan or even a Kirk Cousins, as crazy as you may think that sounds. Kyler Murray, is he already a top 10 quarterback in the league? Few takeaways I had. Also, you know, Ryan Tannehill is somebody that I've always said, I'm not sold on just yet, and it looks like the rest of the league agrees with me in that sense. They left him out of the top 10. But what I find interesting, two things. This tells us, I think, two things about the quarterback position today in the NFL. Number one, when you look at these top 10 quarterbacks, they're all athletic except for Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, even Justin Herbert and Matt Stafford. Right? They may be more of pocket passers, but Matt Stafford's athletic enough that he'll take off every once in a while. He'll keep a play alive. He'll move around in the backfield. He had to do a lot of running at times in Detroit. Justin Herbert's another pocket passer, but you know he can make plays with his legs. Tom Brady is the one exception. He's a real, true pocket passer. That he's just going to stand there. He's like a statue. He doesn't want to move much. You're not going to roll him out. He's going to stand in the pocket, and he's going to throw it. The other guys, Matt Stafford, always rolling out. Even Justin Herbert, you'll roll him out. Obviously, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, athletic. Josh Allen, athletic. Russell Wilson's athletic. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. And it's something I've been saying for some time. This is the way of the quarterback position. If you want to play in the league nowadays, you have to be athletic. You have to be dual threat. You have to be able to make some plays with your legs. You don't have to be a Lamar Jackson running for over 100 yards every week, but you have to have that ability. You have to have that weapon in your repertoire that you can take off or you can keep a play alive. Or with the pass rushers these days, that they can move the pocket for you, that you can roll out and throw on the move. That's what these other guys do. And my second takeaway from this top 10 list, which, again, I didn't have a ton of issues with. I would probably move around some guys at the back of the top 10, but overall, nothing too shocking to me. Maybe Dak Prescott's a little high at 7, but I do think he overall is underrated in general. But my other big takeaway is the other thing I've always said, that quarterbacks don't have to come from the big programs. In fact, they're usually better when they don't. Right? Patrick Mahomes, from a losing record at Texas Tech. Aaron Rodgers originally started out at a JUCO and then went to Cal. Tom Brady struggled to get on the field at Michigan. Russell Wilson had to transfer, didn't play at the biggest football programs. Josh Allen went to Wyoming. Matt Stafford's the one exception, played at Georgia. But again, is Stafford really the number 6 quarterback? Dak Prescott went to Mississippi State, and they had success while he was there, but before that, didn't have a ton of rich football tradition, and he was drafted in the 4th round. Lamar Jackson went to Louisville. Louisville's not a football school. Justin Herbert, yeah, kind of a big name, right? Went to Oregon. The year before he came out, a lot of people thought that teams should tank for him. He ended up going back to school. And Kyler Murray ended up at Oklahoma, but had to transfer. So you look at the top quarterbacks in the league, and they all come from, it's not your Alabama's, Ohio State's number one recruit out of high school. They come from different backgrounds, and maybe that helps be a successful quarterback, dealing with that adversity along the way. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I asked earlier, you know, because the Citadel, we have the Hall of Fame banquet coming up in October, but, you know, let's start the preparations now. They sent out the press release, and they said in it that the dress code is smart casual, which I have no idea what that is. I tried to do some research. Now, I'm not really concerned. I'm just curious because I'm going to have to wear a suit anyways. But I was looking it up, and I couldn't really find an answer, but I did find all sorts. Here's an article, the main dress codes. Why do we have so many? And why is it so, like, complex? Like, for example, the ones listed here, a white tie dress code. Then you have a black tie dress code. Then you have creative black tie. Then you have business formal or semi-formal. Business casual. Then just casual. Then you got California casual, because that's different. They're much more casual or a different casual in California. Then you have jacket and tie. Then you have cocktail hour. These are the 10 most common dress codes, according to whatever website this is. Well, I don't know what that means. You tell me California casual, what is that? Why don't you just tell me what to wear? All right, like I'm a child and my mother used to pick out my clothes when I was a kid getting ready to go to school. Why don't you do the same? Instead of telling me California casual, tell me what pants or shirt or coat or jacket or tie I gotta wear, and I'll be there. I don't know what smart casual is. I guess it's Be casual, but be smart about it. All right, don't be too casual. Don't show up in sweatpants. I know that's casual, but it's not smart to come to this type of event in sweatpants. Smart casual. I'm not done with this. I'm still going to be looking into this. We still got another hour to go to figure it out. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.